ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Okay, I'm going back to the beginning of this commentary. The philosophers of the Mimamsa school developed this method for deciding which among various possible understandings of a scriptural statement is correct. And they originally applied these six criteria to the analysis of sacrificial rituals. Shruti, direct statement, is the directly perceived meaning of a word or statement when it is clear and unambiguous. There is no need to resort to the other criteria. Linga, second one, linga, logical indication. Linga is in the sense of hetu. Hetu means a reason. So here linga means reason. Linga, logical indication, is the conventional meaning of a word whose meaning is not at once obvious. Okay, we wanted to add to the commentary an explanation of how that's so, how logical indication turns into conventional meaning. I think we can figure that out, that when you have a word, why is the meaning not obvious? Because the word has several meanings, possible meanings in different contexts. Like this word bar here can mean any kind of grass, or it can mean specifically kusha. Like a shatpada can be any creature with six legs. But by convention, it means a bee, not other insects. Pankaja can mean anything that grows out of the mud, a tadpole. But by convention, it means a lotus. So when you become aware of the conventional meaning in a particular context, because the conventional meaning of words changes when you're dealing with different subject matters, you have jargon, you have technical terms for that particular, that's like sadhanam. Sadhanam can mean house, but when we're talking about, you know, making a sadhanam for the devas in the sacrifice, we're not building a house out of bricks. We're making seats out of kusha grass. So we know sadhanam there means a kusha grass seat in the context of something to be offered to the demigods in the sacrifice. So according to the context, a certain conventional meaning becomes appropriate. And it would be different, a different meaning in a different context. So when you can identify in your particular context which conventional meaning you're using, which of the several possible meanings you're using, that gives you logical ammunition to figure out what's actually going on, what's actually meant by the statement. I can see how it's a hetu for understanding. This is like a gyapaka hetu. Yeah, but that's, how does that identify, how does that equal logical indication? I'm trying to show the link between being a logical indication and being a conventional meaning. But a conventional meaning is a reason. Identifying a conventional reason is a reason for understanding which meaning the statement has. It's a gyapaka hetu. It's not a karaka hetu. It doesn't make anything happen, but it makes you properly understand. I think that's the kind of indication here. It's a logical reason for understanding. It means this and not that. Because that's in the example, that's what it is. Here's the example. For example, there is a statement in the Vedas describing the ritual for preparing kusha grass, sacred kusha grass. Barhir deva sadanam dami. I cut the grass, the seat of the gods. Okay. Etymologically, the word barhis could refer to various kinds of grass. But the conventional usage in this context is that it refers only to kusha grass. Actually, I think I have to say conventional context in this context of the sacrifice, because the conventional usage in some other context could be different. Certainly, if the word can mean something else, there must be a context in which it does mean something else. So I think I have to specify that. I'm going to insert a comment. In the context of the sacrifice. Okay. Sorry, hold on a second. All right, got it. I'll continue. But the conventional usage in the context of the sacrifice is that it refers only to kusha grass. To resolve the ambiguity, one must first use the linga pramana, which specifies the conventional usage. Does it? I think the linga pramana argues from the conventional usage. The conventional usage is not the conclusion of the argument, it's the reason for the argument. I got to make a comment on that too. Hold on. That's not exactly right the way it is. Okay, continuing. Really awkward here. To derive from this statement an injunction, since for the Mimamsakas the only ultimately meaningful statements are injunctions, a second step is required. The presumption of such an unspoken statement as the cutting of kusha should be done with this mantra. Okay. Now, because applying linga requires an extra step to arrive at a specific injunction, it is less indirect, is less direct, and so will be overruled by a directly perceived meaning, shruti, if one is available. For example, there is an injunction, Aindriya Garha Patyam Upatishteta. With the mantra for Indra, one should honor the Garha Patya fire. By linga, conventional usage, the word Aindriya would suggest that this sentence enjoins that Indra be honored. I'm going to say it's not just conventional usage, but let's say reasoning from conventional usage. That's I'll give that as a gloss for linga instead of just conventional usage. From conventional usage. Because this is the conventional usage, therefore the statement means such and such. Because in this context the word means this, therefore the whole statement means is about kusha grass, not about some other grass. Because that's what we want to know. We're just, you know, we want to do the sacrifice. We need to know which grass to use, that's all. We don't care about the philosophy, we want to know which grass should I use. I want to do the sacrifice right. By linga, conventional usage, the word Aindriya would suggest, by linga, arguing from conventional usage, the word Aindriya would suggest that this sentence enjoins that Indra be honored. Because he used the Aindra mantras, okay, we must be worshipping Indra. This is overruled, however, by the direct sense of the injunction, that the fire instead is meant to be honored, because the Garhapatyam is the karma, the object of the sentence.
It says you should worship the Garhapacha. It's right there. By similar reasoning, the other pramanas listed in this verse are progressively still weaker because they are even more indirect, each requiring an extra step to arrive at a presumed shruti. You know where I got all this? I didn't make it up. This is all from Baladeva Dibhushan's commentary. All these examples and everything. Yes. Argument from conventional, or I say reasoning from conventional usage. No, no, but linga means the process of arguing from conventional usage. Yeah, where do I do that? Well, first time I say linga is logical indication, and then I identify it with conventional usage. That needs to be clarified. I'm gonna write something else to clarify that. No, but where do I say that? Linga logical indication. Yeah, I'm going to fix that because that's confusing now. Yes.
It seems that the linga is like you have the, but it's like two steps, but put into one. Is that you have Bhagir Deva Sadhanam Dhami? I cut the grass, and then okay, you biological indication, you say, okay, well, the conventional meaning of Bahir actually refers you to Kusha grass.
But then
in the context
of this sacrifice, yes.
Of this sacrifice. But then, by logical indication, you do something else, which the Mimamsas do, says, oh, actually, this is an injunction.
No, injunction is Shruti, not logical indication. Logical indication tells you that it's this particular kind of grass, kusha grass.
Yeah.
But now, we have to have a shruti.
But
ultimately we have to have an actual injunction. We don't have one, we haven't been told one, so we have to make one up. We have to imagine one. And the one that we imagine is, with the following mantra, you should worship the kusha.
But the process of imagination, that's
is shruti. It's the coming up of the shruti.
Is it coming up, but you use linga because you seem
to... Yeah. Linga leads to shruti. When you apply linga, that implies the shruti. Yeah.
So it's like, it seems there's two steps. It's first of all, you give the conventional usage.
There are two steps. Therefore, it's indirect.
That is kusha, and then... No, within linga. But because the way...
The way to say that is... The linga leads you to understand. I'm sorry. The linga helps you identify what kind of grass you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then you can guess what the shruti must have been, even though we don't have it in front of you. That's the second step. So the second step is the step of finding the shruti. You don't have one, so you make one up that fits the bill. But that's the shruti step.
But the
linga step leads back to the shruti step. You don't have to argue that the linga itself has two parts. It's the same thing. But the way that the Mimamsakas explain it is that the linga helps you decide which of the ambiguous possible meanings is the meaning in this context. And then that makes it possible for you to decide what the shruti is, what the actual injunction is.
But it seems that you do two logical indications. Is that one is you, okay, what's the conventional usage? Then by logical indication you find the conventional usage. And then
there's logic involved in all of it. When you're making guesses, how are you going to make a guess? You don't see it. It's not in any book that you know. Therefore you have to guess it. So the guesswork is a kind of logic, but it's not. Guessing is not certain logic, it's guessing logic. You know, the logic of guessing is not the same as the logic of drawing a certain conclusion. A guess is an uncertain conclusion. Maybe the injunction was this, but maybe it was something else that also fit the bill. But I'm going to guess this one.
It's a kind of logic, of course. Whenever you do any guessing, it's a kind of logic. You see, linga is a particular kind of logic.
Okay.
Linga is, in this technical context, linga doesn't mean any logic. It means the logic of taking from the appropriate conventional meaning, drawing a certain conclusion from that. Yes, there's other logic involved, but that's not linga. Linga is very specific. In this, you know, the linga that we're talking about is a specific linga. Other logic is there, but we're not identifying that. That's just
okay. What
goes on in your brain. Your brain has to somehow put two and two together to guess what the shruti is. But it's not, first of all, it's not strict logic. It's just a guess. And second of all, that's not what we mean by linga. But linga is a particular kind of logic. So there's not two applications of linga. There's only one. One application of linga, and then your brain processes it by its own crazy logic, you know, and then the second step is shruti. We're not counting all the little things that go on in your brain. It would become much more complicated to analyze all the movements of the synapses in your brain and all the little things you think. We're just taking the major steps. Linga leads to shruti. Two steps, not three. Although, yes, there are other things going on in your brain in between. But we're just not counting them. Because we're just... Baladeva Dibhushan here is simply outlining the standard way that the Mimamsakas analyze this. This goes back to Jaimini, and they've been doing it like this for thousands of years. This is the way they do it. We're just following what they do, their way of thinking. Okay? Continuing. Vakya, the sentence, that's the third linga. Not linga, the third criterion. It literally means the sentence, but what do we mean by that? Refers in this context to the syntactic linkage between words spoken together. The syntax, the anvaya. For example, somewhere in the Shruti it is said, Yasya parnamayi juhur bhavati, na sa papam shlokam shrinoti. One who has a juhu ladle made of palasha wood will never be reviled. No one will ever say anything bad about him. The simple fact that the adjective parnamayi is in grammatical agreement with the noun juhu, right? It's visheshanam, indicates by vakya pramana that being made of this kind of wood alone serves the purpose of the ladle. You know, it just says somebody who has a ladle made of parna will never be reviled. You could say, well, what if I have a plastic ladle? You know, maybe I also won't be reviled. But the implication here is that it's got to be that kind. It can't be a different kind. It doesn't say literally that kind and no other kind, but we assume that's what the gist of it is. That if it wasn't parnamayi, then it wouldn't have the same effect. Or maybe it would. We can't really be sure from what's said here, but to play it safe, we better get a parnamayi stick, ladle. We know at least that one works. We're not sure about the other ones. Although a ladle made of other wood could do the job physically, the transcendental benefit of the sacrifice is accomplished only by using a parnamayi juhu. Okay. We read the next paragraph too, so let's go through this. An example of vakyas being overruled by linga can be found in the pair of statements. There's two sentences here where the... separated by the period. The comma is separating the clauses. Each of the sentences has a few clauses. Anyway, first sentence is Sionam te sadanam krinomi gritasya dadaya sushevam kalpayami. And the second sentence Tasmin sida amrite pratitishta vrihinam meda sumanasyamaha. Translation, O rice cake, I am preparing a nice seat for you. And with a flow of ghee, I am making it agreeable for your use. And then the second sentence. O cream of the rice grains, please sit on it with a composed mind and remain fixed on this immortal seat. Okay. You can talk to rice cakes because you're actually talking to the devatas, the presiding deity of the rice cakes. Doesn't mean you're crazy. Okay. Then, the explanation. These are two separate sentences. But their ideas are connected by the pronoun tasmin. On it, that's syntax, so that's vakya, the grammar of the sentence. At the beginning of the second sentence, tasmin, pronoun, which refers back to the sadhanam, the kushak mat. Connected by the pronoun tasmin at the beginning of the second sentence. From the conventional meaning of the words involved, we can tell that the first sentence is meant for the ritual. That means vakya is leading back to linga. From the conventional, then, you know, first of all, the vakya tells us there's a connection. These two sentences are actually connected into one idea. And then go back a step from vakya to linga and consider what the words mean in the context. And then we reason that the first sentence is meant for the ritual of preparing a seat for the rice cake, and the second is meant for the ritual of inviting the rice cake to take the seat. Oh, that's the correct understanding. Okay. I see. From linga, forget vakya. If you just look at linga, which is the second more direct criteria, we seem to have two separate injunctions that belong to two different rituals. First one is meant for making a seat for the rice cake, and the second ritual is the ritual for inviting the rice cake to take the seat. Those are two different rituals within the sacrifice. But if we try to apply vakya pramana, that tells us, because of that word tasmin, that the two sentences are connected. Although vakya pramana tries to tell us, on the contrary, that these two sentences, as a combined statement, are both meant to be used in either of the rituals, vakya is overruled by linga. So the vakya evidence is that we have one injunction. If we have two rituals, then this one injunction can be used in either or both. But it's relevant to both, so that means you can use the same injunction for both of them, or the same mantra. This is a mantra, not an injunction. This is actually talking to the devatas. Yes. It's a mantra applied in carrying out an injunction.
I'm a little bewildered about linga here. If we're saying that linga means, the
reasoning from the conventional meaning.
So, how are we doing that here?
Well, like sadhanam. Sadhanam can mean a brick house.
Okay.
But in the context, it means, not even a kusha mat bought from the market. It's not supposed to be a sewn together mat. It's just you spread kusha grass on the ground and say a mantra, and that's the sadhanam. But we know from the context that that's the conventional meaning of sadhanam in this context.
Okay, so it helps us to understand that sadhanam means a seat rather than a house, but how does it help us to understand that it's two separate injunctions rather than one? I didn't see how it does.
Well, it is two separate sentences. And it's just vakya that makes us want to put them together. If we don't apply vakya, then we just let them each be two separate injunctions.
Yeah, even vakya, like even according to grammar, you know, like sionam te sadhanam krinomi would be one vakya. Kridasya dharaya susevam kalpayami would be another. Anything which has a verb, which is a complete idea, is is a vakya, so it's like,
seems like... Right, but when you have a connector between sentences, and here it's a connection by antecedent of tusmin, then there's a logic, it becomes one logical idea. It becomes one, it can be considered, it could be considered one injunction, even though it's two sentences.
Right.
A sentence can be more than one injunction, that's okay.
Right, yeah, I can understand.
I mean, I'm sorry, an injunction can have more than one sentence in it.
Yeah.
You know, just like, if you want to go to heaven, you should perform the Jyotishthoma sacrifice. And you should do it like this, and then maybe several sentences. That's all. That all makes up the one injunction.
Yeah, I can understand what you're saying in terms of injunction. We gave the definition at the beginning of that previous paragraph, vakya, in brackets, the sentence, but maybe it might be saying like
well,
the
okay,
injunction.
Vakya is literally sentence, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's not the technical meaning. Let me just clarify by going up there. Oh, I'm sorry, I got to find it. Vakya, sentence. Literally, but not technically. You see? That's what the word literally means. I'm making a note to myself, and I'll explain it somehow, that this is the literal meaning of vakya, but in the context of mimamsa, it means something more, you know, it means the grammar of the sentence. And what vakya is sort of trying to tell us is that there's one grammar linking the two sentences by the connection of the antecedent of tusmin.
Okay. I'm sorry that I keep asking questions. It's difficult for me to understand. I still don't understand how linga lets us know that it's two separate injunctions rather than one. I can see how sadhana means that it's a seat by linga.
Yeah, I guess it's the default. If you have two sentences, you would assume it's two different injunctions, normally. It's an abnormal condition when two sentences get combined into one injunction. So if vakya didn't tell you that, then you would just assume it's two different injunctions, normally. I can clarify that too. I mean, I could say that unless something special tells you to link two sentences together into one injunction, you would normally consider two sentences to be two injunctions. I'm sorry, Nityanapu, I see your hand, but I got to write this down too. I have to write this down or I'll forget it. I have to explain. Say that the default is, I'm going to rewrite this into something meaningful, but two sentences equals two injunctions. That's the normal situation. But vakya could tell us to link together two sentences. Syntax could tell us that. Yes, I'm sorry, yes. Actually, Nityanapu had his hand first. Yes.
Is it that linga also could be established by the, say, because I guess, isn't it that this scenario, when you have these different sentences put all together, is the general way how all these mantras are contained
applied
in the samhitas?
Means or just what? Or what?
How all the mantras are contained in the...
No, samhita. It doesn't matter. Where they are in the samhita doesn't have much to do with how they're to be applied in the sacrifice.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
So this is the way how they are there. They are all put together. But then the linga or the conventional usage is established by whatever. I guess there's some you were explaining.
Well, normally linga you would deal with one sentence at a time.
Huh?
Normally.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to clarify that the linga could be also established, not made by us, but established by the, say, like the rishi or, you know, whoever, you know, or there are some explanatory notes to Vedic mantras, like sutras.
It could be. It could be a commentary that points out the linga.
So it doesn't have to be inferred by ourselves, this linga.
It has to be inferred. You know, it's not there in the original text. But we can infer it for ourselves, or a commentator could infer it for us. But it is inferred. It's not in the original text.
Yeah. And that's I guess there is one of the Vedangas, which is called the Kalpa. Does that deal with this? Which mantras to use in which rituals?
Yes.
So people actually learn it from Kalpa.
But Kalpa, where the Kalpa shows up is in the sutras. Shrauta sutras, Griha sutras, those are in the category of Kalpa. And that's what those texts do. Tell you how to use mantras from the Samhitas, which mantras to use where in which sacrifices. Okay. Madan Mohan Prabhu.
Just to continue Matsyavatar Prabhu's question about these two statements, the connection between words Sionam and Amrite Pratishta Amrite Vrihinam, is the connection Linga connection or is it Shruti connection? What kind of connection is that we understand by these two different terms the same substance?
Well, looking at the two clauses, or you can even say they're two separate sentences. Shonam te sadanam kronomi, gritasya daraya sushevam kalpayami. What's missing in the second sentence is no object. Both of them have first person subjects. But sadanam is the object of the first part, shonam te sadanam kronomi. The second part is gritasya daraya sushevam. That's an adjective, but where's the noun? So what we have to assume is that it's still sadanam is the object. That's syntax. That's linga.
But I'm asking about amrite vrihinam, the cream of
Tasmin siddha amrite pratishtita.
How do we identify amrite vrihinam with sionam? Is it a linga connection that we by
well, default? Tasmin, this whole thing is one sentence. Tasmin siddha amrite pratishtita vrihinam meda sumana siamanaha. It's asking the rice cake to sit down and do certain things. You know, like, sit down. Why should I sit down? Because you'll get some nectar. So sit down and enjoy the nectar and be happy. So what it is, from linga, we can tell that this is an invitation to the rice cake. Please sit down on this grass seat. It's all part of one statement. It has three clauses, three verbs, and they're connected by grammar. Fine, but we don't have a doubt about how they're connected. If we know grammar, we'll know how they're connected.
Yes, the question is that
we apply linga when we're confused about the meaning. Here, there's no confusion.
The question is, how do we know that it's not some separate cream of rice grains, which is also invited to see the same seat with?
Okay.
Cake. That's
the
question.
You tell the rice cake, I'm making a seat for you, and then you invite, you know, the halva to sit down instead.
Yeah.
Made out of cream of wheat.
How do we rule
you know,
that
so
out?
You make for the cream, you make a seat for the cream of rice, and then you go ahead and invite the cream of wheat to sit on it. That's pretty crooked. Yeah. You know, if you're going to make a seat for the cream of rice, you should invite him to sit down, not somebody else.
So is it a Shruti connection between these two words or linga connection? In other words, when we
you're trying to analyze all the connections in terms of linga and shruti. But linga and shruti only exist for resolving apparent contradictions. Otherwise, what we're dealing here is grammar and logic. But linga and shruti are not all kinds of grammar and all kinds of logic. Linga and shruti are special applications of logic or grammar for the purpose of resolving apparent contradictions between statements. So here we're not dealing with an apparent contradiction. We're just dealing with the normal grammar and the normal logic of the sentence.
So that's why
don't call it Shruti and Linga.
Okay, that's why I'm asking the...
Yeah.
By which means do we know that Sionam means Amrite Vrihinam?
I'm sorry, the which means what?
Sionam means Amrite Vrihinam. By which means, in other words? Because I'm asking this question...
The Vakya Pramana tells us that Tasmin is a pronoun referring back to the sadanam. The tasmin, because all the second sentence says is sit down on that. Maybe that is a rocking chair. or something else, you know. Sit down on this, you know, cushion. But no, we're taking the tasmin to refer back to sadhanam by grammatical connection. It should be something already mentioned, not something unmentioned, like a rocking chair. So tasmin, by the logic of the grammar, refers to sadhanam. And that links the two sentences together. That is the application of linga, of vakya, that link the two sentences together. And if I'm telling sit down on this, then when I say the next part of it, you know, drink, sit down, you know, and enjoy the nectar of the rice. I don't know exactly what does that mean. Oh, Krima, please sit and with a composed mind and remain fixed on this immortal seat. Oh, Vrihinamita is a sambodhanam. Oh, nectar of cream of rice. Okay, what's your question?
Basically refer to somebody else or something else besides this. They're asking. I'm asking this question just to understand what takes precedence over what here and connecting these two verses as one injunction.
Linga takes precedence over vakya. Therefore, we're going to let them be separate injunctions. As far as how do we know that we're talking to the same person who we made the seat for, that's just ordinary, you know, usage of words. Yeah, no, it's not linga. Linga is only for resolving apparent contradiction. We don't have an apparent contradiction here. It's obvious by the ordinary application of grammar and logic. Ordinary grammar and logic tells us that the person we're addressing as nectar of the rice is the same person we were talking to in the first sentence. That's just ordinary way of putting, you know, following one sentence by another. I say, I'm making this for you. And then I say, please use it. You can assume normally that the second sentence is talking to the same person that the first sentence is. It's abnormal to, you know, I say, Vishnu Kanta Prabhu, I have a sweet bowl for you. And then I say, here, take it, and I give it to somebody else. That's strange. You know? If I'm talking to someone, then when the next sentence should be talking to the same person normally, unless there's a reason to shift. If I tell you I'm giving you a sweet ball and I give it to somebody else, I've shifted illogically. It's crazy. So it would be crazy, without a good reason, to change the person you're addressing between these two sentences. There's no reason to do it. And that's just normal grammar and logic. It's not any special application of the principles that are used to settle an apparent contradiction. There is no apparent contradiction. It's just clear enough in normal usage. I talk to somebody and I continue talking to him in the next sentence and I'm still talking to the same person. Unless my mind is not in order. Yes.
Well, there are different personalities involved in each sacrifice, so they, at a certain point of time, they shift to another person and start talking.
Yeah, but
to
what you normally do is indicate that you're switching. I say, oh, Indra, this is for you, and oh, Soma, this one's for you. You know, I have to give an indication that I'm shifting my attention to somebody else by addressing, you know, by name the other person, so I know that now we're talking to another person.
So it implies sambodhana, so here we have sambodhana which may be taken. Anyway, I don't want to...
Like I have, you know, a plate of sweet balls. This one's for you, Vishnu Kanta, and this one's for you, and you want to take that one too, but I'm talking to someone else now. Yeah. Yeah. Can we just proceed? I think I answered it. And I wanted to finish this today. Okay, we proceed. We proceed to the next, number four, Prakarana. This is even weaker, even less direct. Prakarana, context, is the mutual expectancy of two complementary statements. For example, we can consider the two statements, Samido Yajati. One worships with the kindling sticks. And Darsha Purnamasabhyam Swarga Kamo Yajeta. One who wants to achieve heaven should worship by the Darsha Purnamasa sacrifices. Now, the first sentence, one worships with the kindling sticks, leaves unanswered the question, worship for what purpose? Why should I worship these sticks? What for? The second sentence leaves unanswered the question, worship by what means? It says, well, you should worship it. Okay, let's see what it says. But Prakaranas Pramana allows the meanings of the sentences to be combined. When both Prakarana and a stronger Pramana are available, however, Prakarana is overruled. You got this? I have two sentences. They actually need each other to make a complete idea. Because I just say, worship with the sticks. And you say, well, why? Why should I worship with the sticks? And then I say, you should worship, if you want to go to heaven, you should perform Darsha Purnamasa. Well, how do I do that? And the answer is, use the sticks. So the two sentences fill up one another. They both supply missing information by context. So by application of that principle of context, you can figure out what to do and why to do it and how to do it. You get a complete package. In this case, you need more than one sentence to get the complete idea. To inspire someone to perform a sacrifice, you have to tell him all of that. Not just what to do, but why should he do it? Because Vedic injunctions are not absolute commands. You can ignore them. Because look, the Vedas enjoin thousands of things. How many of those things am I doing? A few maybe, or none. So I have to be given a reason why to do this particular sacrifice. I'm not going to do all of them. They're all enjoined. But I'm not going to do all the sacrifices. I'm going to do the ones that serve my purposes. So I have to be given encouraged with a reason why to do it. And third, I have to be told how to do it. So all three pieces of information have to be supplied. In a context where one sentence doesn't give all the information, then you have to combine it with other sentences. That's Prakarana, to figure out what's actually the injunction. But then you have to go back step by step. You have to apply Vakya, then Linga, and then Shruti to get the injunction. It's three steps removed. Yes?
Just a suggestion here. We're asking worship by what means?
Yeah, that's confusing.
And then the by in the two sentences is by the Darsha Purnamasa sacrifices, whereas it's with.
Okay, let's say how. I'll say worship how.
Yeah.
Let's say how instead of. Can I do that?
Yeah, sure. Somebody might say, though, that the Darsha Purnamasa Bhyam Swagakamo Yajeta, that it's already complete, because how should you worship with the Darsha Purnamasa? What if somebody says that?
Except for, we don't have any idea what those sacrifices involve. We just have the names, so we don't know what they are.
Right.
So we need to be told what actually you do in those sacrifices. Anyway, I think what I have to change is worship by the should be changed. Because now we are asking by what means.
Yeah, you could say like worship with what, because you got
with what, or something that doesn't make it sound like the same thing.
Right. Yeah.
Let me work on that. I know what the problem is. I have to think of a solution. Let's continue. Now, I don't give an example of Prakarana, or of Prakarana being overruled. I think because Baladeva Vidyabhushan didn't. I just move on to the next one, number 5. In the absence of a stronger pramana, the context of statements may be determined by sthana, their proximity. Either their proximity in the text in which they occur, or else the proximity of the rituals they describe in the order of the sacrifice. Like, you measure how close two injunctions are. Well, you can measure it two different ways. They're both mentioned in the same text. How close together? How many other injunctions are in between? Or those injunctions are four rituals. When you perform the rituals, how many other rituals are between them, or how close are they? For example, okay, sthana, however, may be overruled by prakarana. For example, the complex Rajasuya sacrifice includes a ritual for anointing the king. In the text that sets forth the Rajasuya Yajna, there are two statements, both located near the section describing the Abhishek, anointing. Two statements. And they're both near the section describing the Abhishek. Akshayar Divyati, he plays dice. And Rajanyam Jinati, he defeats kings. By Sthana Praman, these two statements might be thought to belong to the Abhishek ritual. Because they're both close to the Abhishek ritual, you might think that this is part of the Abhishek. That why, you know, during the Abhishek, he should play dice and fight with other kings. But according to Prakarana Praman, they belong not to the Abhishek, but to the bigger context of the whole sacrifice. How is that? Anyway, the Prakarana Praman is stronger than the Sthana. Prakarana, like, you know, you're told that the Abhishek, the whole ceremony of the Rajasuya lasts for so many days. So the question is, what is he going to do all that time? There's only so many rituals. He has a lot of time left over. So here's other things he can do to fill in the gaps between rituals. He can play dice and go fight with kings. So the relevance of those statements are in the bigger context of the whole sacrifice. What does he fill up his time with? Even though these two statements are very close to the description of the Abhishek in the order of the text, that being close is overruled by the logical context of how they fit in the whole sacrifice. Problems with that? Or do we just pass, let it pass? Any questions about that? I mean, is it unclear? Okay. Then the last and weakest of the six pramanas is samakya, which means the etymological meaning of the words. You know, we had conventional meaning. Now we have etymological meaning. That's way down on the list, number six. Yes.
We're saying they belong not to the Abhishek, but to the bigger context of the whole sacrifice. Does it mean it's like a requirement of the sacrifice? Does it mean that it's a requirement of the Rajasuya
sacrifice? Yeah, you have to defeat all the other kings first.
Okay, and you have to play dice also?
Yeah, I guess it's part, but it's not part of the Abhishek. It's just part. It's another part, another separate part of the sacrifice.
Okay.
Because you should defeat the kings before you even start the sacrifice. The last and weakest of the six pramanas is samakya, which means the etymological meaning of words. In the description of the Hotri Chamasa, a cup for drinking soma, there is no indication of whose cup it is. Okay, the Hotri Chamasa is described, you know, that you have to carve it like this, it's made out of this kind of wood, it has to be this size. But the description doesn't tell you whose cup it is. Everybody gets a separate cup in the Soma Sacrifice. Everybody has their own cup. But the word Hotra Chamasa is a compound derived from Hotri, Rig Veda priest, and Chamasa, Soma cup. And so Samakya Pramana allows the presumption that it's the Hotra's cup. Simply because it's called Hotra Chamasa. And you know, you just have to apply simple, you know, grammatical derivation. That it's a Shashti Tat Purusha Samasa. And it's the cup of the Hotri. That answers your question, even though the description of it doesn't tell you, but the phrase itself tells you. But that's the weakest, the most indirect of all the pramanas. Samakya Pramana, however, may be overruled by Sthana. In the description of a particular sacrifice, there is a section that begins with the heading, Paro Dashika. There's a heading on the section. It says, about the rice cake offering. That's an Adhikarana. It's not a sutra, but it's like Adhikarana Sutra, a heading. The section mentions several utensils called the Samnaya vessels. Samakya Pramana would use this information to determine that these utensils are meant for general use in offering the Purodasha. But this section also describes a secondary ritual, one for preparing an offering of milk. Stana Pramana, therefore, overrules the judgment of Samakya because these vessels are mentioned within the specific description of offering milk. Let's see, how does that work? Okay, we're under the heading Parodasha, about the Parodasha, offering of the Parodasha, the rice cake. Under that heading, there's mention of using the Samnaya vessels. We know from the patram, we know that by derivation, by yoga derivation, by that patram means vessel. So these are vessels, and we're under the heading of Purodasha, so these must be vessels for offering the Purodasha. But it's in a certain place. It's in a part of this section that actually describes another ritual that's secondary to the first ritual. And that is to offer, I guess you're not supposed to offer the idlis without milk. You know, so you have to make another offering of milk also to go along with the Purodasha offering. And this mention of Samnaya vessels is right inside that secondary section. So Stana Praman tells us by proximity that it's really, those vessels are really meant for offering the milk, not for offering the rice cakes. And Stana Pramana is more direct and stronger than Samakya Pramana. Okay. Maybe the logic there is a little mixed up. Anyway, this is the way Prabhupada Vidyabhushan presented it. Clearest one so far?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, I will look over this whole section again. Try to do something with it. Okay, we have a couple of more paragraphs to finish up the whole commentary. We'll do that tomorrow. We're out of time. Anybody have a desperate question? No? Okay, so we'll stop now. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jaya.